and welcome to DAP Happy episode 2. Wow, we're on to number 2 already. How time flies. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me as ever, as you did for the last episode at least, is Dragos from DAP Radar. How's it going, Dragos?
Hello, everyone. Yeah, all good. Happy to be here. We are at the second episode, as you said. So, yeah, unexpected. What could I say?
You thought we were going to drop it. We thought we were going to fail at one. And we're still happy about DAPs. Still happy about DAPs. So that's the important thing. And,
yeah, exactly.
As ever, kind of lots to talk about. There just seems to be, it seemed to be kind of quiet at the start of the year. And now it's just, getting into summer and maybe depression is lifting and everyone's kind of suddenly got all these projects they're announcing. And DAP Radar also has things to announce. And you've been kind of spearheading this. So do you want to tell us about what's been going on with DAP Radar? We have a exciting new look.
Yeah, sure. It's something that we are working for already a few months. It's something that we are trying to always bring a better experience for the users. So yeah, we kind of this time focused on having a new homepage, having a new pages, some new pages on the website, which are, let's say, more focused on specific topics like gaming or DeFi. So yeah, we have tried to gather together all the articles we are writing, all the data we are analyzing all the time and so on, and put them together categorized, and also handpick some dApps, because sometimes in our rankings there are like really good dApps that are getting lost through all those numbers, because not necessarily a really good dApp needs to have thousands of users, depending on how it works, the logic and so on. So we'd like to have the opportunity and the possibility to promote more dApps that are not always in the top 10 or top 5, and they're like more difficult to discover them. So yeah, we kind of focused on discoverability and putting things together on topics. Mm.
And it's kind of how the kind of sector as a whole has gone, isn't it? You know, at the beginning, everyone was very focused just on data, and obviously, you know, underlying everything that DAP Radar does is this kind of big kind of focus on the most accurate data. But then obviously as we get more mature, people are much more interested in kind of, you know, what should I be doing? You know, I don't care necessarily that this DAP's got, you know, thousands of users. You know, what's kind of interesting? And I think what you've done here is just, you know, just takes that kind of enormous amount of data and just kind of encapsulates it down into nice little bite-sized bits, and people can look at, you know, the top games or DeFi or gambling, and then you have these editor picks and DeFi picks, and that's kind of how, you know, that's how app stores work, really, isn't it? I mean, that's, you know, there's millions and millions of apps on app stores, but really over the last kind of few years, the focus on app stores has been the curation of what's in there, and kind of that's what you need for something to become a bit more mass market.
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously the data remains a big goal of ours. We have like another product which is called Open Data, where we are focusing just on data, and we have loads of data there. But with DAPRadar.com, with the website, we want to help users to better discover dApps and to find really nice dApps or new dApps that do not necessarily get into the top 10 or top 5 and so on. So yeah, we are, as you said, we are looking all the time at app stores and so on, trying to find some ideas that could apply in the DAP space, and yeah, we are also reviewing and checking all these DAPs most of the time. We think we can bring some of this experience that we have and help the users to find good DAPs.
And of course, if you want all the numbers, that they're still there. if you just click through, basically we've got it's like a new homepage that kind of is just graphically just points people in different ways. But if you want the old style, all the numbers still there, just click through and you get the whole caboodle. And I guess, you know, there's people who want both, and both views are interesting.
Yep. Sure. I mean, the rankings button is on the nav bar, so it's always there, easily accessible. If you're just interested in the rankings, you can just click on that and see the rankings. But we are also looking at new users that maybe they're just getting into the DAPs space and the DAPs world. They do not necessarily know how volume works, how users are working, and so on. So they just want to find popular DAPs or nice DAPs that we can recommend to them. So that's the whole point.
Good. And we have lots more things that we're going to be talking about over the next kind of coming weeks and months about how that radar is kind of focusing on this kind of mission of taking great data and looking at, you know, which DApps are doing well, and but then also having this kind of more complicated kind of curation discovery mechanic. But we'll leave that for the time being. We'll leave people in suspense until all the things you've been working on kind of are launched. So if we look more widely, what's been going on in the world of dApps this week? So one thing I've very much focused on is games, and I kind of wrote a report looking at Ethereum games over the last 6 weeks, which have been not been doing well, to say the least.
Yeah,
and I know you play games as well. So how have you been finding the kind of playing Ethereum games with this increased gas price, and has that impacted you and your playing?
Yeah, sure. It got really expensive to use games, and sometimes I just want to do like an action that costs me, I don't know, $1. Like I just want to spend $1 or $5 in a game, but I need to pay another dollar on top of that just for the transaction to go through, which is crazy. So definitely, as we also can see in the article that you have wrote, the graphs are showing that the activity went down a lot in the games, because I think everyone feels the same. There are also like games where you just need to confirm the transaction. Basically, you don't need to spend anything. You just need to confirm or to claim something in the game. You need just to pay the gas fees, and just to confirm something, you need to pay $1. I think that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting that over the kind of years I've been kind of looking at it, often what you see with the Ethereum gas price, which is just the price the price you pay to get your transaction saved into the next Ethereum block, it's just like a, it's what the miners, get, when they mine a block, they get the ETH that's created, and they also get the kind of transaction fees. So it's pretty straightforward kind of mechanic. But I think occasionally we've seen like the gas price spike for a few days, and then we, over those few days, we see the gaming activity go down, and then when the gas price goes back to normal, gaming activity goes back to normal, and then it's just like a blip in the graph. But now we've really seen, it's really, really been like kind of 6 weeks now that the gas price has gradually been going up, and it's up. I think it's kind of peaked at almost like 500%. When I was doing that article, I did like an average, looked at the average gas price for January, and now looked at it in May, and it was at some points peaking at like 500% more, which is incredible. And I know not so much on the game side, but other, like looking at DeFi, some of the things I've been doing there, and suddenly the gas price is just is getting on for like $10. It's just, absolutely bonkers. So I don't know. It's quite, in a sense, it's kind of worrying, because it's, I think previously we've had like spikes of gas fee because something particular has happened in the ecosystem. Whereas now it just seems that Tether is using up a lot of gas because people are using this stablecoin. And there are a few kind of high risk gambling dApps. I think there's about 3 or 4 that are kind of spamming the system a little bit. So if they went away, I think the gas price would go down. But it's hard to see after 6 weeks that it's suddenly going to improve in like the next week. I mean, I just don't know where it leaves games.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and I think sometimes the high risk dApps are the ones that are getting really popular. Even if they are not seen in any of the rankings and so on, they're like, if you look at just the raw transactions and raw data, some of these high risk dApps are going really popular, mostly in Russia as far as I've seen in the last period. So yeah, these things are causing like really high gas prices. As you said, I think it's causing a lot of, let's say, a lot of issues, like the gas price. And I just hope that with Ethereum 2.0, if it will hopefully be launched, we'll see an improvement over this, because that's not scalable at all. So if you look at the gas fees that are spent day by day, that's a lot. And for a free transaction, yeah, like if you are sending like, I don't know, $5,000, and if you're paying $1, that's amazing. That's really good. I mean, that's fine. But if you're just spending $5 and you're paying $1 on the gas fees, that's not how it should look.
Yeah, I think it definitely does kind of underline the importance of kind of ETH 2.0, which I guess, people who are designing it and have been working on it for years know. It's just, it's a very, very complex kind of project they're undertaking, and it's no surprise that it's been slightly or it's been delayed several times. And I guess to some degree, I mean, it's difficult because you have these high-risk dApps in there, but in some degrees, it kind of shows the success of Ethereum in the sense that, it's getting congested because people are using it a lot. in some ways, it's a bit of an old technology now, and the whole ecosystem on Ethereum is now so developed that people are using it a lot, and you need to, next thing needs to come along. And I guess in the other time, we do have these other kind of, you know, people call them different terms, like side chains or things like that, or kind of layer two scaling solutions that are coming on board. There's a few that are kind of launched or just launching that would kind of take some of this transactional activity off the main chain and put it onto these kind of side chains. And actually, Polkadot just launched as well, and there's Cosmos as well. So there's quite a lot of activity around scaling in general, isn't there?
Yeah, sure. We've seen some good launches, at least like in the past week and so on. And yeah, hopefully we will see improvements in this. I was also like just thinking when looking at the gas prices, there are like these services I forgot the name right now, but that are paying the gas fees on behalf of the users. And I think they're like great. So I think if you have a project on Ethereum right now, like if you want the users to keep using your dApp, that's one of the ways that you could solve it, at least temporarily, until there are better solutions. Obviously, it needs to be profitable for you as a dApp developer to pay the gas fees on behalf of the users. But I still think it's like it's a really good solution. For example, like on the, like just mentioning the Reddit community points, they just launched those community points that are rewarding the users on Reddit based on their activity. And the wallet that they have in the Reddit app, yeah, they have implemented this option. So for all the transactions, when you want to redeem or to send those points in the Reddit mobile app, like you don't need to pay any gas fees and so on. They're paying the gas fees on behalf of the users. And I think that brings a really good user experience, at least for the new users.
Yeah, you've got your moon, haven't you? You're on the cryptocurrency subreddit. You collected your tokens.
Yeah, I'm not really an active member. I'm more like a stalker. Like I'm just looking and I'm reading, but I'm not really active. I think I have a few moons. I think Skirmantas actually sent a few moons to me because he's way more active than me on that subreddit. But
another good point. It's interesting. We. On the at that radar, we've written a few articles and a report this week about kind of social media on blockchains, and it's interesting because there's been over time, and I guess even now there's a lot of I guess kind of concern really about kind of social media and obviously what happens to your information, and also, you know, interesting discussions now about kind of centralized control and should companies be allowed to censor people on these platforms, and obviously we're not going to have to debate that now, but yeah, it's kind of interesting that I've always had it kind of you kind of think that there's such a demand, or maybe just loud voices, for people to have this kind of like Twitter on the blockchain or Facebook on the blockchain or something like that, and while there've been attempts, they've not really, there's been very little usage at all. So it is interesting that Reddit are trying to kind of retrospectively fit a tokenization system to what is a very kind of popular platform already. I guess at the moment, if they went live with it, they just kill the Ethereum blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. I think most probably like in the social media space, probably we'll see platforms I don't know, like Reddit or Twitter. I know that Twitter, for example, their CEO is posting sometimes about some project that they are developing around Twitter, like a social media that works on the blockchain, but obviously that's still in progress. But I think that probably we'll see blockchain integrated into the social media platforms in a similar way as Reddit did. Like having a social media platform on the blockchain, I don't think it's a difficult task, but it's more like, I think the difficult part is to bring the users and to make them to use that platform rather than building it. Because, for example, I'm using Pict on Hive. I think that works pretty fine. I mean, it takes a few steps until you are registered and everything is set up. But after then, that is like just using Twitter or Facebook. Like you just post things, vote things, send things. So that's like a really smooth experience. I think there's a great future about this, but it's like how you can convince the users to move to those. Because I think the problem is how you can create a popular social media in general. Because we have the big guys. We have Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, and so on. But then others have tried to create other social media platforms. But it's a really difficult task to move users from the big guys to smaller platforms.
Exactly. Yeah, you either have like a little niche group or you have like a massive global thing. There's not a lot in the middle, because the whole point of social media is you kind of want to have your real life friends on it, or you're just making friends because you have the same kind of interests. There's not a lot in, you know, it's a network effect. You're either small, or you basically have to get everyone to sign up within about a year to make it kind of worthwhile. I guess it's interesting that we have the lots of money and PR has been spent on the EOS Voice social media platform, which has just gone incredibly quiet. I think it should have been, were they not supposed to be launching in May or something? I can't remember. I mean, they spent so much money on it, unbelievable. But that's interesting, whether it works or not, or whether it even comes out, is, I guess what's interesting there was they weren't planning to launch it on the EOS mainnet. They were going to basically build their own blockchain based on the EOS SDK, of course. And I guess that's how kind of Steemit and the kind of the Hive versions of Steemit, they've been the most successful social media dApps we've had. But like as far as I understand it, Steemit, you know, Steam was basically built for Steemit. I mean, it was a kind of blockchain built for that kind of dApp, and so it kind of worked really well, and still, you know, still now is the most popular social dApp, like whatever now, three and a half years on. So maybe that. Maybe that's the way to do. Maybe it's, you know.
Yeah.
If you are going to build a social media platform on a blockchain, you basically have to do your own blockchain. I guess the guys at Kik, KI, is it in French? KIK. I mean, they have their Kin blockchain, which there's been some interesting user numbers around that. I mean, I've had a look at a few things on there. It's very mobile based, and the blockchain stuff is very in the background. I don't think they've had any massive takeoff on it. The numbers I've seen have been.
Yeah, I think probably we'll see like the blockchain will be in the social media apps and in a way of a currency or points or something the first time. Yeah, exactly as Reddit is doing, or other platforms like maybe Telegram was planning to do and so on. So,
of course, yeah, Telegram, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the first step we'll see. Probably one of the popular apps, even Facebook, we'll see how Libra goes, and maybe they will introduce some kind of like tipping or sending funds to the users through Libra blockchain and so on on Facebook. So I think that's the first step we will see, and then I think people will start learning more and so on, and we'll see maybe full social media platforms running on the blockchain.
It is interesting because it's kind of, in some ways, you kind of think, obviously, it makes sense to kind of tokenize that activity. So people are spending a lot of time on these platforms and putting a lot of information on there. And obviously, there's another issue, which is kind of, privacy, which you can kind of build into blockchains. But also, there's this idea that people are kind of building up, in a sense, kind of social capital on these websites. So, you know, to a degree on Twitter, you have a lot of followers. You know, you got you could kind of, you know, have a lot of power in that system. And maybe it's a better way to do that, to actually have kind of tokenization of kind of usage. But equally, the other side of that is that, you know, you're actually decentralizing power in those when you're tokenizing everything, or are you actually giving more power to the people who already had the power? And particularly when if you can buy tokens, then surely just the big companies just go in and buy all the tokens and have all the power. So I think there are some kind of nuances there that is quite difficult to think. And you know, how you would, and also, think it's difficult to think how you combine the value of a token and kind of the way you can use tokens for community building, which is value, but it's not financial value. And those things, I think, often can work in two different directions. I'm sure someone will solve it. There's lots of clever people out there. But something else to talk about, and I guess it's kind of interesting in the context of Ethereum kind of struggling at the moment with kind of congestion, is there's been more details coming out about Dapper Labs' new blockchain, which is called Flow. And certainly when this was announced last year, I was just like, oh no, another blockchain.
Is that really
what the world needs? But to be fair, having read a bit more about it and heard people at Dapper talking at conferences and things, they kind of understood, you know, earlier than most of us, you know, the issues with Ethereum as it was. And obviously, with, you know, when they launched CryptoKitties back in 2017, pretty much they, you know, caused the gas price to boom back then. So they've had first-hand experience of that. But what do you think? I mean, what do you think about Flow? I guess the main thing will be, do you think they can attract developers? Because that seems to be the biggest issue, is people don't like Ethereum because they think it's the best blockchain necessarily, but it has the best tools and kind of the best developer ecosystem and the best support and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say. I mean, obviously, yeah, as you said, when it started, I had the same thought, like another blockchain. But then again, I think they, like the team at Dapper Labs, they gathered a lot of experience. They understood. They have a lot of data to base their decisions on. CryptoKitties was a huge success when it started. So they had the time to think of a lot of things. But I think they have the power to get that. That's what I think at this point in time. I think they have the power to get developers on board. If they can offer a really good experience for the users, the developers might maybe not necessarily move from Ethereum, but even new developers that could start developing on that. Also, they have all these brands, like they have CryptoKitties, which is, let's say, I think everyone in the crypto industry knows about. They will launch the NBA game. I'm sure they are planning to sign maybe other big brands and so on. And to launch games or even collectibles or trading cards on the blockchain for more brands. So I think if they keep doing that with a lot of marketing and offering a smooth user experience, they have a chance. They have a chance to succeed.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's definitely the case that if you can prove that your blockchain has, you know, hundreds of thousands of active users, then developers unless there's a new, very complicated new programming language that developers have to learn. And I think Flow has one called Cadence. I'm not a programmer, so I can't kind of judge, how easy that would be to use. But there is some friction there for developers. But basically, you know, for developers, if there's lots of users there, then they manage to make it work. So I guess that's the that will be the key thing. And it was interesting. I guess we've seen flashes of this. I don't know if you have used the Dapper wallet. Did you ever use the Dapper Ethereum wallet?
I've used it for a bit when it was launched. I think it does a great job for the new users. Obviously, I'm way more used on using MetaMask and so on. But I think for a new user, I think it's user-friendly. Also, like the fact that they pay the gas fees on your behalf, it's also a good thing. Just talking about the gas fees.
Sometimes, like, because we're so focused on what we've been doing it for a few years now, you kind of get locked into kind of old traditional patterns. So I'm exactly the same as you, it sounds like. You know, I basically, when I first did the MetaMask account, I thought it was the most weird thing in the world, and now everyone supports MetaMask, so they just use MetaMask, even though it's probably not the best solution. And with Dapper, it was just because it was different, and you had this kind of, compared to anything else, this slightly weird recovery mechanic. I can't remember what it was. You didn't write down 12 seed phrases, but you had to download a PDF or something. As far as I remember, I did do it. I can't remember quite where that recovery sheet's gone. I don't know, but it would be embarrassing. But just because that was a different way, I was kind of like, oh, what are they doing here? But obviously, if you'd never set up a MetaMask wallet, then that potentially makes more sense of doing it. And now I guess we're seeing more easier onboarding kind of solutions now with other, you know, kind of Portis and people like that.
Sure. There are like a lot of other alternatives, like I know for Matic, even Wallet Connect, they are doing something different there. The only thing is that obviously MetaMask is like they had the most the wider support in dApps. So yeah, even if you try to use something else, if you want to use a lot of dApps, you still need to use MetaMask for some dApps. So yeah.
So it was interesting. So as far as I know, Flow is not out yet, although, you know, they are seem to be testing now. The closed beta of the NBA Hotshots game seems to be some news this week that they were doing that. But there is a now, if I can find it, there's a music kind of app thing called Audius. I'll put it in the show notes, actually. It's worth checking out. And that seems to be running on Flow. I don't know whether it's live on Flow, but I've downloaded the music app thing, and it's... And it is interesting. I mean, it's not interesting in terms of the music thing. It's for music creators. They kind of say it's like SoundCloud, but like a decentralized version of SoundCloud. I don't think all the decentralized stuff is in there yet. But you it's like a PC desktop. At least that's what I downloaded. And it has, if you're a musician, you can upload music to it and build, you know, playlists, all that kind of stuff. I guess you can do on Spotify and things. But what is interesting is it sends you an email once you've kind of signed up. And it says, do not lose this email. You need to keep it safe. If you lose this, you basically, this is your account recovery. We can't recover it for you. So obviously, I don't know if this is how Flow's going to deal with it. They've kind of thought, what can people, remember, not lose? It's an email. But equally, I guess there are some, from a security point of view, sending people, having an email that you need to hit a link on. I think it was email. I think it was changing your password or something like that. And I thought that was interesting because that's obviously much cleaner than writing down 12 words, which no one does unless they know what they're doing. But equally, much less secure. So do you actually have more people losing their accounts because you've made it so much easier to kind of onboard? I guess it's always that. That's the balance, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Also, like talking about audios, I think they're doing a great job. We've actually met their founder when we've been in San Francisco in January, so this year. They were like still using POA, I think, back then. Obviously, they're not too happy about that. I think they had some issues with that, and they were planning to move. Probably I had no idea they moved to Flow or they plan to move to Flow, but that's great. And just check Audius out. It's a really nice way. And one thing that we have discussed with their CEO, they're saying that they haven't mentioned anything about the blockchain, because if you go on their landing page or in their apps and so on, there's nothing mentioned about the blockchain. It's using the blockchain on the back end basically, but there's no mention about that. Like the users have no idea that's working on the blockchain unless you want to find out more. So I think that's a really great concept. Talking about the flow, I'm not sure exactly how it will work. If it will work in the same way as like on Ethereum, where you need the seed key and so on, or it will just be some, you need to download some file or something, and that's the only key to your account. I'm not really sure about that, how it works.
It is quite a, that's really, in a sense, kind of the heart of the onboarding kind of problem we've had with blockchains is, and it's not like the current situation is brilliant because you have to write down something on a bit of paper and keep the bit of paper, so that forces you. And so I imagine some people are quite good at doing that. If you're very organized and file away all your paperwork in a, in your special kind of fireproof kind of cabinet, then it's like another bit of paper. That's what I do all the time. But I think we have to say most of us are not kind of at that level. So in a sense, writing something down on a bit of paper is kind of better than obviously storing it on your computer where someone can just kind of hack it quite easily. And we've seen plenty of examples of that. But equally, at some point, someone has to, for it to be a decentralized system, how do you deal with the fact that someone has to have control over what happens if you lose your password or your the hardware it's running on, if it's a phone. And I guess we haven't solved that yet. There's some interesting ones. I don't know if you use the Ardent wallet. Have you used that one?
I have it, but I haven't. I know they have implemented some DeFi dApps and so on, but I have not actually used it a lot.
Yeah, now, it's interesting because they have this thing, and in some ways, it makes it more complicated. And I didn't really understand it until I heard a podcast with the CEO talking about it. And you have these things, the idea of guardians, and that makes it sound like it's some RPG or something. But basically, you set up these, you create a trusted list, so you can use Argent itself, and they'll be like one of your kind of guardians. Or if we were both on Argent and we knew each other's kind of kind of usernames, I could set you up as my, one of my guardians, and then you basically have it. It's like a multi-sig wallet. So if you have like three people, if you have three guardians, two of them have to kind of agree to kind of reset your account. And it's more complicated than that, but it is a kind of interesting kind of mechanic. And you kind of think that potentially that's something that works a lot better because it's just you're just distributing trust in a way that we kind of, I guess, inherently have socially. There's people that we trust, family, friends or family, and then there's also kind of organizations we trust, but we don't necessarily just want to trust the organization, or maybe we just don't only want to trust our friends and family. So mixing that together is actually quite a nice way of doing it. And I guess, it's that concept, gets used by lots of apps or dApps or whatever, then that becomes, that just becomes common sense. So that's how people deal with these sort of things. But I guess we're not there yet, but.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a really great concept. I think I've seen some news about that, but I've never tried to set up any any guardians or anything in Argent. But yeah, they're doing a great job as well, like with all the DeFi dApps integrations and so on, like just unrelated to the security. But yeah, they're doing a great job.
Yeah, no, this is probably something she's talking about. We should have a DeFi podcast, because their app was their app's now live, and they've actually integrated a whole bunch of DeFi kind of dApps within their own kind of mobile app, and it is some interesting stuff there that they're trying to do. Anyway, I think we've got... go ahead.
Yeah, no, one thing about this, I think what they have done in a really nice way is that they are not using the normal way of like how other wallets are doing when they just have a dApp browser. So you just click on Pull Together, for example, and you go to the Pull Together website and interact with Web3 website, basically. They just integrated the functionality of those dApps directly into the app, which I think it's great. Also, like talking about Play Store, App Store, and so on, because I think they can smoothly go on Play Store, App Store without any issues if they have this kind of integration.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it also helps for the DeFi thing, where I think when you start moving between user interfaces, then that becomes confusing for people. It's just like, what am I doing here? You know, we're going, what's it? It's like, you know, you go to a different website. It's like, and when that's about money, you don't expect to move from like the I don't know, your banking website to suddenly link out to some other thing. It's like, yeah, so yeah, cool. Okay, well, we'll put that on the list to discuss on a future podcast. we'll go into a bit more detail on, as we're both interested in that. Cool. So I think we're episode 2. I think we've wrapped up. We didn't quite go where I thought we were going to go, but that's even better, because we talked about things we were kind of passionate about rather than things I thought we should talk about. So excellent. Yeah. And I should say, listeners, if you have any topics for us, please do reach out to us. You can get us on Dapp Radar Twitter. Obviously, that's probably the best place to find us. So please, if you have any suggestions, do that. But other than that, thank you very much, Dragos, for carving out half an hour from your busy schedule.
No worries. Thank you, John, for the podcast, for the questions, and for everything. And see you at the next episode.
Yeah, come back next week. Don't forget, if you haven't subscribed, please do subscribe. We are available through I think 11 different kind of podcast platforms now. So no excuse not to sign up. Thanks for listening, and hope to see you next week.